Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 92 of Wheat All About It. Before I get to this week's episode, I'd like to address you, the faithful listeners of Wheat All About It. I can't tell you how appreciative I am of your support, shown by the fact that you're listening right now. But there aren't enough of you. When I started as an agricultural reporter in 1986, a 2,000-acre wheat farm was considered a big operation. 32 years later, that figure is closer to 10,000 acres. One of the reasons for the growth in the size of farms is the opportunity it provides to spread costs over more acres. The same is true for this podcast. I need to spread my costs, which includes my time, my experience, my intellectual effort, and of course, my Washington Grain Commission salary, over more listeners. If you consider this podcast educational or entertaining, please take the time to let others know it exists and how easy it is to master the process required to listen. For the farmers among my audience who are no stranger to the frustratingly slow internet in the countryside, let your neighbors and landlords know about downloading multiple episodes when they come to town. Many county libraries have faster internet speeds than can be found in the city. Even cafes and parts stores have Wi-Fi you can use to access this podcast. Finally, if you've got a cell tower nearby, a 4-bar signal will download the podcast quickly. For university faculty who listen to this podcast to better understand what goes on in the wheat industry outside their labs and offices, please pass along a good word to your colleagues. We may be compartmentalized in terms of the work we do, but we do not exist in a vacuum. Learning about the industry from another perspective ultimately makes for better scientists and administrators. That goes for landlords, too. Sure, many are on the older side and don't believe an old dog can learn new tricks, like downloading a podcast. But look at me. A few years ago, I had no idea I'd be listening to a podcast, let alone hosting one. You can do it, and so can your fellow landlords. But first, they have to know the podcast exists. If each of you listening now brought just 3 more listeners into our exclusive group, I'd be satisfied my costs were being spread over an adequate number of listeners. The Washington Grain Commission helps market your wheat to our customers, but you are responsible for helping to market this podcast. Please do your part to ensure Wheat All About It continues to share the story of the Pacific Northwest wheat industry. Now, without further ado, I'm bringing back a segment not heard since episode 47. That's right, the World Wheat O'Clock Report. Each month I read dozens of periodicals, newspapers, and online sources to find articles that I believe Eastern Washington wheat farmers, landlords, agribusinesses, and consumers may find compelling. The World Wheat O'Clock Report includes international and domestic news about events, products, and trends affecting farmers and our favorite crop. It's how I imagine the media might cover wheat, if there wasn't enough of it.
Hello, I'm Scott Yates with today's World Wheat O'Clock Report. The major headlines. Fair, you decide. Soybean farmers are on tap to receive payments of $1.65 per bushel on 50% of their production for what the USDA is calling China's unjustified retaliation for tariffs imposed by the Trump administration. Wheat growers will receive 14 cents per bushel. In total, soybean farmers will receive $3.6 billion of the $4.7 billion being paid out. Wheat's portion of the pot is $119 million. Cotton growers, meanwhile, are receiving 6 cents a pound for a total of $277 million. Sorghum growers are receiving 86 cents per bushel, or $156 million. Corn growers are receiving 1 cent per bushel for a total of $96 million. The program will pay on 50% of production initially, with another payment possible later depending on market conditions. In the 2016-2017 marketing year, China purchased more than 300,000 metric tons of soft white wheat worth more than $60 million. So far this marketing year, China has purchased no soft white wheat at all. Absence makes the heart poor. In a Wheat Watch column that will appear in the October edition of Wheat Life, WSU ag economist Randy Fortenberry estimates how much China's absence from the U.S. wheat market may be worth to growers. In the column entitled China Fuels Wheat Trade Anxiety, Fortenberry writes, quote, "If we use the midpoint of USDA's market year wheat price range for the September world supply and demand estimate called WASD as a price expectation, then U.S. wheat farmers are currently expected to receive a national average price of about $5.10 per bushel in the 2018-2019 marketing year. But they would receive closer to $5.47 per bushel if China were still in the market for U.S. wheat. Given the total U.S. supply of wheat estimated in the September WASD, this results in a total loss value of almost $1.2 billion." End quote. Although Fortenberry went on to qualify his expectations, if that statement is correct, even though wheat prices are higher this year than last, prices would be about 37 cents greater if China was in the market. Ticking time bomb. U.S. Wheat Associates is calling America's absence from the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Treaty a time bomb set to demolish more than 60 years of hard work by multiple generations of farm families. The treaty, now called the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership by the 11 remaining countries it includes, could be implemented in early 2019. It will discount the tariff rate facing Australian and Canadian wheat from about $150 per metric ton to $85 per metric ton. Tariffs on U.S. wheat will remain at $150 per metric ton. The U.S. absence from the TPP is eventually expected to cost U.S. wheat farmers $500 million annually. Land of the livestock. Agricultural land takes up about a fifth of the country, but the amount used to grow the food Americans eat is smaller, about the size of Indiana, Illinois, and half of Iowa. Most cropland is used for livestock feed, export, or is left idle. More than a third of U.S. land is used for pasture, the largest land use type in the 48 states. Nearly 25% of that land is administered by the federal government, with most of that in the West. 41% of U.S. land in the 48 states revolves around feeding livestock. Since 2008, the amount of land owned by the 100 largest private landowners has grown from 28 million acres to 40 million acres, an area larger than the state of Florida. Bread before farming. Human beings began cultivating wheat about 10,000 years ago in the Fertile Crescent of North Africa, but it turns out they were making bread out of wheat long before that. Archaeologists from the University of Copenhagen have discovered the remains of flatbread baked by hunter-gatherers more than 14,000 years ago, the oldest direct evidence of bread use found to date. The site of the find in Jordan included 24 different bread remains. Similar to unleavened flatbread, the bread was made of wild cereals of barley, acorn, wheat, and oats that had been ground, sieved, and kneaded prior to cooking, a time-consuming process which, one researcher said, probably contributed to the decision to cultivate cereal crops. Prior to the recent discovery, the oldest bread found was dated at 9,500 years old. The new discovery would seem to indicate that individuals who follow the paleo diet can eat bread. Orca Schmarka. The Army Corps of Engineers estimates that the Snake River dams have a potential 2% impact on orca recovery, with ocean conditions and pollution having far larger impacts. This despite dam breaching advocates who charge the four Snake River dams are killing the Puget Sound orca population. According to Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers, recovering Western Washington rivers would be more helpful than a free-flowing Snake River for providing Chinook the orcas need to eat. Soft white wheat to the rescue. The country of Foodadia was a top 10 recipient of soft white wheat in the 2017-2018 marketing year, surpassing hard red winter wheat. Not familiar with Foodadia? That's because it's not a country, but represents donations to various nations under the food aid category. In the 2017-2018 marketing year, wheat donations were also a top 10 export customer for the U.S. as a whole. Soft white wheat donations were particularly robust in Yemen, which is in the midst of a civil war. Civilians have gone back to milling whole grain in small mills in their villages because the modern flour mills built in the country have been destroyed by the war. Yemenis like soft white wheat's brand color. In the last two marketing years, a total of 372,000 metric tons of soft white have moved to Yemen. Where have all the teenagers gone? In 1978, 72% of U.S. teenagers were employed during the summer. 72%. In 2016, just 43% of teens were employed during the summer. A rite of passage is passing. Beer consumption down. Will barley follow? Although beer has been the alcoholic beverage favored by most Americans for many years, in 2017, for the first time ever, more Americans were reaching for a glass of wine or a cocktail. According to the Beer Institute, drinkers chose beer 49.7% of the time in 2017, down from 60.8% in the mid-1990s. Molson Coors Brewing is trying a new approach to gain market share. The company, which saw its beer sales volume drop by nearly 5% in 2017, has formed a joint venture with a Canadian cannabis producer to develop non-alcoholic cannabis-infused beverages for the Canadian market. Other beer companies, including Constellation Brands, the maker of Corona, as well as Heineken NV, are also testing the pot waters. Recreational marijuana use will be legal throughout Canada in October. Warmer and sicker. According to the dean of Boston University School of Public Health, man-induced climate change is sending disease-carrying insects into new territories. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention says ailments caused by flea and tick bites tripled in the U.S. between 2004 and 2016. Editing your food. Simplot has acquired a license to use the new gene editing technique called CRISPR-Cas9 to create food products for the future. The multinational agricultural company based in Boise made the deal with Dow DuPont and the Broad Institute of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Harvard University. It is the first agricultural company to receive such a license. CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing speeds up the traditional process of breeding to get a desirable trait. Simplot said it will likely be 5 years before a new potato is released using the technology. Cultured cattle. Wheat farmers who also raise cattle will soon have a new competitor for their market, cell-grown meat. That is, meat which has been produced in the lab from cattle cells is ramping up. German drug maker Merck recently invested $9 million in Netherlands-based Mosa Meat as part of a continuing effort to fill global meat demand through an alternative that doesn't require livestock. Backers say it requires a fraction of the resources used in traditional livestock production. Although there have been no commercial sales of cell-cultured meat, it is drawing a lot of interest. Besides Merck, U.S. meat processors like Cargill and Tyson Foods have invested in the concept, not to mention the founders of Google. The first cell-cultured hamburger was unveiled in 2013. They're not making it anymore. Between 1992 and 2012, 31 million acres of farmland, equal to all of the farmland in Iowa, has been lost to development in the United States. That's equivalent to 3 acres being lost every minute over the 20-year period. 11 million of those lost acres are considered some of the best in the country, the equivalent of losing most of California's Central Valley. Most of the loss has been caused by low-density residential development, that is, houses on 1 to 20-acre parcels. Farmers draw the short straw. Farmers' share of the consumer food dollar is at its lowest point since 1993. In 2016, farmers received just under 15 cents of every dollar spent by consumers for food. That's a nearly 5% decline from 2015 and nearly a 14% decline from 2014. It is also the lowest since the USDA's Economic Research Service began analyzing such data 25 years ago. The recent decline is the result of lower commodity prices since the highs of 5 years ago. Also, Americans are eating out more, and restaurants claim the greatest share of the food dollar at more than 36%. Unless food is purchased directly from the farmer, those who process, package, transport, and market food add more than 80% of the cost. Farmers are price takers, not price makers, while everyone else along the supply chain may add to prices to cover increasing costs. Although commodity prices have fallen considerably between 2013 and 2016, food prices have increased 1.5%. The shrinking world of wheat. Black Sea wheat exporters have wrested control of the Middle East market from the U.S. Now they have their sights set on Asia. Low ocean freight rates means that countries like Vietnam and Indonesia are buying from the Black Sea at rates not seen before. In the past, Australia has been Asia's go-to wheat source along with the U.S., but money talks. Earlier this year, Black Sea wheat at 11.5% protein was trading for between $220 and $227 a ton versus wheat from other sources at $255 to $260 a ton. Indonesia, which is on track to buy 12 million metric tons of wheat in 2018, is expected to take half of that from Russia and Ukraine. In total, Asian wheat importers purchased 12.6 million metric tons of Black Sea wheat in 2017. A 40% chance of anything. Will the price of wheat continue to rise? There's a 40% chance. At least that's the figure prognosticators of all sorts use to couch their predictions. According to those who use the 40% number, if they're correct, they can say, "See, I told you so." But if they're wrong, they can say it was just a strong possibility in the first place. It's called going out on a limb without going out on a limb. The 40% rule is used extensively in business. Sour up those wheat products. Wheat is a crop that has been farmed for more than 10,000 years and is the key ingredient for the foundation of civilization. So how did it become the center of criticism for causing gastrointestinal problems for many people who don't suffer from celiac disease? The Alberta Wheat Commission, Saskatchewan Wheat Development Commission, and the Minnesota Wheat Research and Promotion Board are asking that question too. With nearly $150,000 over 3 years, researchers will attempt to discover whether it's not the wheat, but the way the wheat is being prepared in products that is the problem. With more than 3 million people now following a gluten-free diet, the consortium of groups hopes to discover whether the difference between modern and ancient methods of producing finished products is causing the problem. For most of history, wheat was harvested, milled, and then culturally fermented in a process utilizing naturally occurring bacteria, yeast, and water, called sourdough fermentation. This method takes over 12 hours to complete and in the process breaks down proteins and carbohydrates in wheat flour that are known to cause wheat sensitivity. The research, which will be carried out at the University of Alberta, intends to determine whether fermentation reduces or eliminates individual wheat components that are known or suspected to cause adverse health effects. GE Wheat Event Number 4. There have now been incidents of genetically engineered wheat being found in Oregon, Montana, Washington, and most recently Canada. Glyphosate-resistant wheat plants were found in southern Alberta during the 2017 growing season and determined to be herbicide-tolerant in January 2018. A report indicated that the wheat found in Canada was genetically different from the GE wheat found in the U.S. Ultimately, the wheat was a match for a Monsanto line which was planted in research fields in the late 1990s and early 2000s in both Canada and the U.S. The Canadian trials were more than 200 miles from the site of the GE discovery. No links between the two sites have been found. In stark contrast to the finding in Washington, when overseas customers were informed of the GE wheat fine early in the process, the Canadians withheld knowledge of the discovery for a year, with customers only learning about it as news was released to the general public. Japan and South Korea initially suspended imports of Canadian wheat, reopening the countries to imports about a month later. There was no determination how the wheat appeared in the farmer's field. Man-made solution. Progress does not come without drawbacks, but if you believe in humanity's capacity to overcome inherent disadvantages, then a device which removes carbon dioxide from the air is just the ticket. Although planting trees on an area the size of Canada to convert CO2 into wood is one way of reducing carbon enough to make a difference, it is impractical. Enter a CO2 removal technique that uses off-the-shelf technology to clean up the atmosphere. There is already a pilot plant using the technology that extracts a ton of carbon dioxide from the air each day. A fully-fledged facility capable of extracting between 100,000 and 1 million tons of carbon a year at a cost of between $94 and $232 a ton, in the process creating zero carbon fuel, is expected to break ground before the end of the year. Hard on a dog's heart. Although pulses like peas, lentils, and chickpeas are being marketed as alternative carbohydrates intended to replace grain in boutique dog foods, it turns out such grain-free diets may be linked to a deadly canine heart disease. The numbers are small and no recalls have been issued, but the U.S. Food and Drug Administration announced it is investigating after receiving reports of dogs falling ill on the grain-free diets. The disease affects a dog's heart muscles and often results in congestive heart failure. In episode 40 of Wheat All About It, Tim McGreevy, CEO of the USA Dry Pea and Lentil Council, talked about the use of pulses in pet food diets as one of the new opportunities for Eastern Washington dryland wheat growers. U.S. Wheat says net to Russia. U.S. Wheat Associates is closing its Moscow office effective October 1, 2018, as part of an ongoing restructuring of overseas offices designed to refocus resources on markets with the best potential to grow U.S. wheat exports. The office had been established in 1992 and is now staffed by a single individual. The U.S. exported up to 400,000 metric tons of wheat a year to Russia from 1992 to 2000. As Russia shifted to a grain exporter, the USW office has been used to gather market information on the bear's grain industry. In 2017, USW closed its office in Cairo, Egypt, which is now being supplied almost exclusively with Russian and Ukrainian grain. Girls gone to college. Northwest Farm Credit Services recently awarded 78 scholarships to students throughout the Pacific Northwest and Montana, totaling $156,000. The scholarship offerings had a strong female bent, with more than two-thirds, 68%, awarded to women.
That's all for this edition of the World Wheat O'Clock Report. Please join me again next time for more news about the issues affecting our favorite crop. Until then, I'm Scott Yates. And I'm back. That is the Scott Yates who serves as the WGC's Director of Communications and Producer Relations. I hope you enjoyed this edition of the World Wheat O'Clock Report, and you'll tell your neighbors, friends, landlords, employees, agribusiness associates, FFA instructors, students, truckers, airplane seatmates. You get the idea. About this one-of-a-kind podcast. Wheat All About It is the only place you can get news about your wheat industry that gives it the status it deserves as one of the essential commodities necessary for feeding a growing world population. Please join me again next time for another episode of Wheat All About It!